Christians from across West and Eastern Europe are meeting this week in the German town of Wittenberg, home to the church where Martin Luther is said to have nailed his 95 theses to the door, sparking the Reformation movement. Participants there are preparing for the third European Ecumenical Assembly, to be held in September in Sibiu, Romania, the first time such a major ecumenical meeting will take place in a majority Orthodox nation. The preparatory session starting this Thursday focuses on secularization as a challenge for all the churches, the place of Catholic and Protestant theology in the ecumenical movement, and reconciliation as a key to Christian unity.
The whole reality of reconciliation and healing, which is deeply rooted in the way Christians understand their faith generally, is also a great challenge between Christians to recognize, and very much part of the reflection of these next few days here in this third stage and into Sibiu, to be recognizing what it means to be forgiving towards the other.
Among the delegates is Monsignor Andrew Fahey, Assistant General Secretary to the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, with responsibility for ecumenism and interfaith relations.
This particular gathering is very much focusing again on the place of the church in Europe, the church's vision for Europe today, and considering through shared reflection and particularly prayer, the overall theme of the assembly in Sibiu, the light of Christ shines upon all. So it's very much within that context that people are gathering here in Wittenberg to celebrate a shared faith, a shared response to what the challenge of modern Europe offers to Christians today.
As you say, the meeting in September will be held in Sibiu, which is for the first time, if you like, a meeting like this being held in the heart of the Orthodox world. That's going to have a huge impact, isn't it, on the proceedings, on the work that's going on?
Yes, I think it will. We're certainly hoping that it will, so that we're able to celebrate together with those deeply Christian and a very, very rich history within those Christian communities in Sibiu and Romania generally, to share with them what they bring to a strengthening and a challenging of the Christian vision for Europe in the broadest sense. And it'll be a marvelous opportunity for us to celebrate together through the range of Christian traditions within Europe, but particularly being hosted by the Orthodox and other Christian traditions within Romania itself.
Some would say, though, that the incredibly diverse situations to be found, for example, in a country like Romania compared to a country like your own Great Britain, or indeed a country like this, Italy, the situation of the churches are so different that it must be hard to draw much in the way of common denominators that can really help to forge a way forward, if that's indeed what you're looking for.
Well, I think that's true on the one hand, but on the other, what the assembly and the whole process of reflection, which includes these next few days here in Wittenberg, implies and means is also respecting and celebrating the common source of all Christian tradition to be the Lord Jesus himself, the gospel, the church's tradition. And although it's true to say, inevitably, that history has imposed on the Christian tradition a wide and, in some senses, a widening variety of traditions and commitments and understandings, it's still hugely important for us to recognize the common source for all Christian tradition, and in that way to be not just consolidating, but celebrating through prayer and reflection especially on what it means to be a Christian and a responsible Christian within the increasingly diverse reality of modern Europe.
To some extent, this is a debate really about whether the church has a public role to play in modern society, or whether it really is a private affair for individuals who choose to believe, isn't it?
Well, yes, but again, I think the challenge for any Christian in any context, in any part of the world, and especially, therefore, for us in Europe, is to appreciate the Christian's responsibility and place within the world, particularly as reflected on so inspiringly by through the late Pope John Paul II, and also taken up, I think, very, very clearly by Pope Benedict currently for the Catholic tradition, that it's our responsibility not just to keep the faith, but to proclaim it, and to be proclaiming it in a way that makes a challenge, that offers a challenge and makes a difference to the way society thinks of itself, that Christianity has never been a private religion. Christianity has never been bound by land or territory, but is very much about the transforming of the lives of individuals through example, through prayer, through commitment to the gospel and to the Lord himself.
You're talking about the changing religious makeup of our European countries, particularly with the arrival of large Islamic communities. How much is interfaith dialogue also going to be a focus of your discussions there?
Yes, the interreligious dialogue and relationships are very much part of the reflections leading towards Sibiu. They're one of the main themes through the process of discussion. So what we continue to do is to reflect on the relationship between Christian tradition and the other faith traditions in a way that takes seriously the principles of interreligious dialogue. But we are not in any way trying to blur the boundaries or the edges between one faith tradition and the other any more than we would be doing that within the ecumenical context between Christians.
Every change in the debate offers difficulties and opportunities. I very much hope that the European churches have the capacity to use the opportunities rather than, as it were, sink under the complexity of the debate.
Another participant at the Wittenberg meeting is Dr. Grace Davey, an Anglican professor of sociology from Exeter University and a specialist on issues of religion in contemporary Europe.
Clearly, the historic churches are still there, but they have lost the capacity, their capacity to discipline the beliefs and behaviour of most European people. I don't think anybody disputes that, and that I would call a process of secularisation. That is counteracted, a very different factor, is growing religious diversity in Europe, the arrival of significant numbers of Muslims in Europe, and the reopening of debates about religion in the public sphere, which many Europeans had thought were closed, definitively closed. Now, that cannot be, that's a difficult situation, but it cannot be put under the rubric of secularisation. In some ways, it's the reverse.
As you say, it's almost an ambiguous attitude that many people have nowadays towards the churches. You're saying they want the churches to be there, but somehow not to interfere in the public sphere.
I would go a little bit further than that. They certainly want the churches to be there. I think very few people would prefer Europe without the churches, if they think it through at all. They certainly want them there for pastoral care at liminal moments, particularly at the time of a death. They're much less relaxed, if you like, about the presence of religion in the public sphere, though that's more difficult in some societies than others. But they most definitely don't want the churches, as it were, dictating anything in terms of private life, private morality, the decisions about families, that kind of thing, which they find intrusive.
In your opinion, how well are our European church leaders dealing with the implications of this huge change in mentality of believers, if you like, today?
I think some are finding it more difficult than others. And I think here you find the very powerful influence, which is sometimes a very positive thing, of the legacy of the state church, that it gives many advantages in terms of presence, in terms of influence, historic influence in the public sphere, which has not entirely gone in many places. I mean, England is a very good example. The Archbishop is highly influential, even if he has almost no power in the English case. But a state church, a territorially embedded church, a parish church, is also a very immobile church. And I think there is the European churches tend to be a little bit static. They find it difficult to react quickly to new situations. I think a great deal of work needs to be done on what I would call the advantages of a weak state church, instead of always majoring on the disadvantages of a strong state church. A strong state church is excluding and exclusive. That was so historically all over Europe and still is in some parts of Europe. I mean, you notice it more in the Orthodox countries than you do elsewhere, but it can still be the case elsewhere. If you go with a much more positive reading, you could say that a much weaker state church keeps the advantages of the state church but uses it much more creatively, like making places in society for the seriously religious of whatever, or holding spaces in society for the seriously religious of whatever faith.
So are you saying that a weakening, if you like, of the traditionally dominant role of the churches should make the ecumenical and indeed the interfaith dialogue much easier in a way?
If it's used creatively, most certainly yes. But if used creatively is the key bit of that sentence, because it gives all sorts of opportunities, all sorts of, sufficient influence, clout in a local community to gather a meeting, to hold a meeting, to host a meeting, but not, as it were, the historic power that meant it was necessarily dominant. So I think what I think is, as it were, the key is recognizing your legacy, not pretending it was different, because you can't do that, but, as it were, maximizing its advantages in the current really very complex situation.
The other point that you're underlining as one of the most significant influential factors on the future of the Christian churches is the arrival of large communities of other faith traditions, notably the Muslim populations in so many European countries. Is it fair to say, is it possible to say that this is perhaps the most significant factor that will shape the churches in Europe in the future?
It's one of, I don't know if it's the most significant. Don't forget in your analysis the arrival of very significant numbers of Christians from the global south, which is also changing the nature of the Christian churches. A very small example that I picked up the other day was it's Europe into Europe, which I think is an aspect of the debate we shouldn't forget. There are enormous numbers of Polish people in England now, which is, in some parishes, totally transforming the Catholic Church. I mean, the one or two nice accounts over Christmas of churches in London that were absolutely packed to the doors, and it was primarily the Polish community. But Islam, I think, is particularly significant because the traditional mode, if you like, or one of the ways that Europe has dealt with religion in post-Enlightenment Europe is to call it a private matter, and provided you keep out of public life, you can do more or less what you like. You know, you have freedom of belief and assembly, that kind of thing. But it's very difficult to privatize Islam. Privatized Islam is almost an oxymoron. And so many of the big clashes, if you think of the Rushdie controversy and you think of the Affaire du Foulard, if you think of the Danish cartoons, if you think of what happened in the Netherlands with the Theo van Gogh, they were all public incidents. They're not private incidents. And it's this reassertion of religious issues in public debate, which I think is a consequence, or one of the consequences, of the renewed presence or growing presence of Islam in Europe. And that, I think, is a catalyst. It's altered the whole nature of the debate and required Europeans to rethink issues that they had thought had been resolved in terms of European history. And hence the debate about the European Constitution, the very difficult set of issues surrounding Turkish accession to the European Union, anxieties about the presence of Islam, which of course cannot be dissociated from debates in the wider world.
My thanks there to Dr. Grace Davey, a specialist on religion in contemporary Europe, and to Monsignor Andrew Faley of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.